to you from Sturgis, South Dakota, the Buffalo Chip, and my buddy Chris McGee and me.
All right. New York Mike, great to be here. Hey, it's the 40th anniversary of the Sturgis Buffalo Chip.
40th anniversary of the chip, the 81st anniversary of the Sturgis Rally, 81.
81.
How do they survive the first 40 years without it?
You
know, I guess the chip is part of modern day technology.
Technology.
Because without the chips, all the chips are here, baby.
Well, I tell you what, without South Dakota and the freedoms that this great state has, a chip wouldn't be here. The inception of it was Rod Woodruff and the challenges that the riders and the people that were coming here to enjoy the Black Hills and enjoy this sport were having with the city. City was like, oh my gosh, what's happening? Early races with the Jack Pine Gypsies and all that, fantastic. And it just drove more people to come and enjoy riding the Black Hills. I'm second generation in the industry. You ride all over the country multiple times a year. Some of the best riding in the world is here in the Black Hills.
Exactly.
And the city at one point was getting scared. We don't have the infrastructure. Too many people. We don't want them camping in the park. And Rod grew up here, Rod Woodruff, and said, this is just ridiculous. This is what we need. These people are good people. And he had this plot of land 4 miles outside of downtown.
What amazes me is I was here in 85. That was my first trip. South Dakota, mm-hmm. Black Hills, Sturgis. I'll tell you the story later. I came here and I'm there in the park.
Yeah.
That was it. And I walked the streets.
You know, OG.
Sturgis, you did not go near Rapid City. If you're a biker, cowboys don't like bikers. And it was like a war zone.
Right.
You just didn't
Sounds
do
like
it.
A David Allan Coe song.
Those were the days, my friend. I thought they'd never end. But that's the way it was. Okay. I remember the sign, 2,300 people. That was the population of Sturgis.
Yeah.
And it blew up to like 40 or 50,000. It was like huge.
Right. Fantastic. Woo. Yeah. Great for the sport. Great for America. V-twins. That's our quintessential export of the world. We want more people on American V-twins. This Harley Davidson is America. It's apple pie. It's baseball. It's hot dog. It's Harley Davidson.
That's true.
So when the city was having these challenges, back when you put your flipping bedroll down in the park and they were kicking everybody out of the park, Rod had this great piece of land. He said, I want everybody out here in the first year, 81, right? There was the Buffalo Chip party in the pasture.
The Buffalo Chip may have been here when I was here in 85, and I probably heard of it or did it. Now I come back.
Yeah, it wasn't a big deal. It was like a trailer.
I come back in 1990 for the 50th.
Yeah.
It was like, wait a minute, I've been here a few times. I never saw anything like this. It was like jam-packed. You couldn't get any place. You couldn't find a spot. The only place to even put down a ground cloth was the chip.
Yeah.
That was it. And
hospitality at its finest.
Rapid City was booked. I thought they hated us. So all of a sudden, the whole thing, it became a regional rally. Black Hills, I think it went from Sturgis to the Black Hills route.
Sure. Sturgis is just a
little town.
You know, you're, of course, but it means so much. It's
Black Hills.
It's Sturgis. It's Spearfish. It's Custer.
It's the epicenter.
And there's so much American history within, what, an hour ride of here.
Right.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. From Custer to Sundance to Devil's Tower to
I just love,
you know, Crazy Horse Memorial. Belfouche is,
you know,
beautiful. What
Belfouche,
a great little town.
And Spearfish.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Places we never heard of before. And then
America,
all of a sudden we're here.
Yeah, so it's fantastic.
Okay, Chris McGee, you got me here. You got me into the Buffalo Chip, and you got me into Kirsch helmets.
It's unbelievable. It's been a great week. We've had great acts. Kid Rock has been out here, Drowning Pool. We've got ZZ Top coming up, Shinedown, Clint Black. It's just been unbelievable. Stone Temple Pilots were out here last night. Unbelievable way to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the Chip, 81st anniversary of the Sturgis Rally, and fantastic to have you brought your broadcast out here to the Buffalo Chip, my friend.
The Buffalo Chip. I love it. I love it out here.
So I started working with Kirsch Helmets about a year or so ago as Vice President of Business Development. And what captivated me, I knew the team, I knew the crew, great core people. Of course, our friend Steve Peel, former Harley-Davidson executive, is there. And knowing Steve over the years, he said, I've been working with this helmet company. You have to meet him. You have to meet this guy, Donnie DeVito. And meeting Donnie, seeing the team, meeting them, seeing the facilities and the unbelievable work they're doing, bringing to market the only 100% American-made helmet on the market is unbelievable. I said, boy, if I ever get a chance to work with a company like that, it would be an honor. And that's what it's been, and we'll continue to do so. We're doing unbelievable work. I'm going to introduce you now to the CEO of Kirsch Helmets, Donnie DeVito, and he's going to tell you a lot more about this. But man, this is right up your alley. So thanks for having us on today. Really appreciate it. And have a great time. Enjoy the rest of the rally and enjoy the rest of the time at the Buffalo
thanks.
Chip. Donnie DeVito, I just scraped the iceberg at the top of what's going on with the technology and innovations at Kirsch Helmets.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Chris McGee just gets so carried away. Chris McGee is the voice of the Buffalo Chips. I just want you to know that. And I want to talk about yesterday for a second, because yesterday was the Legends Ride, and we get down to Deadwood, where the Legends Ride takes place every Monday at the beginning of Bike Week. The Legends Ride raises money for a good cause every year. And so I said, you know what? We're going to go down with our friends to Deadwood. We're going to get to the Legends Ride. I get there. And instead of just being in front of the Franklin Hotel,
historic, top of Main Street, Deadwood,
they built
Franklin.
A whole freaking pavilion over there, square. Yeah. It was like, wow, what's this? It's next to the Silverado. For you guys that come here a lot, know what Sturgis is about. You go to Deadwood. It's right next to the Silverado, that corner that used to be the parking. Mm-hmm. They turned it into Outlaw Square, a huge stage with all kinds of great stuff. And there's Chris McGee. Wow. And everybody's starting to gather as we get there, and I'm walking in, and then he starts talking about, here comes the governor of South Dakota, Christine Noem.
It was fantastic.
And she comes riding in on a freaking horse.
Not just a horse. That was Iceman. That's ice.
Horse.
That's her horse, yeah.
And she comes riding in on Iceman, and Chris is up there, and putting the whole thing together. It was that place filled up.
Yeah, I just certainly didn't put the whole thing together, but the Legends Ride is such a great, iconic piece of what the rally is now. 14 years. So this was Rod Woodruff's vision, and the team at the Buffalo Chip has been putting this on for 14 years.
That's right.
Years.
They had all the chip people where you could see them.
Yeah. Logistically, big project. Each year, 500 some odd bikers. It's a limited. It sells out every year. So look at legendsride.com or sturgisbuffalochip.com for the Legends Ride. Search a little bit on YouTube. But if you've been on it, great. Thank you. If you haven't, this
you're
is the thing.
Something.
I know you're up here all the time. Yeah. So at the top of Main Street, historic Deadwood. I mean, American history happens here.
Hey, they made a TV series. And the movie.
About
the town of Deadwood.
That we get to ride through. So the Mayor David Ruth, every year, is so gracious, closes down some of the streets there for us to ride through. And the Legends Ride comes up, and 100% of the rider contributions go to some great charities.
Every year.
The Sturgis Motorcycle Museum and Hall of Fame, and the Black Hills Special Olympics. So it's great that the riders for 14 years know that they've been supporting these great charities by this ride. And this year, we were doubly blessed. Each year is fantastic,
right?
But with Governor Noem part of this, it was fantastic. Yeah, so it was a surprise, and we did a wonderful bike auction. The guys from Lloyd's Garage and Charlotte of Indian built this unbelievable custom Indian, and the gentleman bid on it and won it, and we were timing it. So during his photo shoot and the excitement and the energy of this live auction, here we go. We had a real auctioneer up there rattling
it
off.
Yeah, that guy was good,
Dave,
too.
Yeah, he's local.
There
you go. You're in it. You're in the flow. And we timed it perfectly. So during a little interview with the guy and photo op and the energy is up, Governor Noem at the top of Outlaw Square, which is this great grassed area and seating and a big stage and Jumbotron that faces the historic Franklin Hotel.
The big Jumbotron hall. It was everything was there.
She comes riding, cowboy hat, American flag from her office that she rode at the National Rodeo as well. She used that flag from her office at the National Rodeo.
Right.
And top of Main Street in front of the hotel, and just surprised everybody. We knew where she was coming, but turned, what's going on? There's a disturbance over there. Everybody look over here. And it's, Governor Christy Noem of the great state of South Dakota rode down through Outlaw Square.
Let's see Ron DeSantis beat that.
No chance.
Well, yeah, baby.
Maybe. And she comes and rides ice. Literally up onto this huge main stage.
Can you imagine? Here's Christy Noem in the meeting, goes in the room, and there's Andrew Cuomo, and he tries to put his hand on her. She would smack him from the door to the closet to the window and out in the hallway.
Kirsch Helmets was up at Legends Ride as well. You guys had a booth there and talking to all the riders about helmets. And I know you had some riders go out on helmets and everything. But you were there during when Christy Noem came up. And you got to talk to a lot of the riders and stuff up there. What was the Legends Ride experience for Kirsch Helmets?
Well, first with Christy Noem, what a vision. She comes in on this horse, larger than life, controls that horse, gets right up on stage. And
she that was just, pretty cool.
It was.
Can't
cool.
take it for granted.
No.
Like Donnie just said, she comes riding in and then gets the horse up on a stage. They're a team.
That.
Who does that?
Yeah,
it
was, she was
pretty
awesome.
Cool. Very impressive. Chris has got to go, but I got to tell you, the job he did yesterday, and he's a great guy, and I'm proud to know him. That was a great job.
Oh, he's always fantastic.
Nobody expected the governor coming on a horse. And then David Yule comes up on the stage. Now, you understand, if you don't know David Yule, look him up. Scott Jacobs, a good friend of mine, phenomenal artist. There's so many. But David Yule, when it comes to painting pictures of people on airplanes and motorcycles, David is amazing. And so he painted this amazing work of art with Governor Kristi Noem on her horse, Iceman, at the Buffalo Roundup. They would do a Buffalo Roundup every year.
Sure.
And he did this painting, and they're going to auction it off. And, of course, Chris McGee is handling the auction with this auctioneer he's talking about. And to make it quick, they raised $55,000. The charity was for human trafficking.
Yep.
She was a member of Congress for many years before she became a governor. And this was one of her projects. So the money went to that. Then she came in with the horse, with the flag, just like at the rodeo that she
sure.
comes out. So she signs the flag.
Yes.
So they raised $55,000 for this amazing painting. By the way, that painting is worth $150,000. If you want to get David Yule.
It's on its
Yule,
way to Texas now.
Yeah,
she's
but wait
gonna
a
hang it herself.
Yeah, and yeah, that was it. Kristi Noem said when the auctioneer was talking about it, he said, the governor's going to come and hang it. You know, they're up to like 30,000, 40,000, 50,000. The governor's going to come and hang it on your wall and all that. And boom, it went to 55. But here's the other thing. So then they auction off the signed flag. And it was bought for $25,000.
It was amazing.
It was amazing how much money they raised for this charity. And it was a great day. But then I met you. And now, wait a minute. I gave you a little more backup because Chris McGee called me a month ago. I've known Chris for a long time, and he was Magnaflow, and he's been a professional in this
sure.
industry as long as I can remember. We've done a lot together, and Chris McGee is a professional. And when he says, Mike, you got to try it. Do me a favor. Just check this out. And he tells me the good and the bad and the ugly about Kirsch helmets, and most of it is very flattering. And he says, but you've got to try it. I said, okay. He said, and this is like maybe a month or 6 weeks before I write the Sturgis. So we meet, and he gives me this 25-pound helmet. And he tells me, he says, listen, I know it's going to be heavy. It's a good-looking helmet. It's engineered like crazy. It's a little heavy, but when you wear it and you put it on your head, you're not even going to know it's there. I go, okay. Chris isn't trying to sell me a helmet. He just wants me to check it out. He knows I ride a lot, and I'm going to be riding the Sturgis. And I pick it up, and I go, oh, my God. Okay, Chris, if you say so. So I go home. I show it to Petrina. She picks it up. She goes, oh, my God. She says, what are you going to do? Are you going to wear this, or are you going bowling with it? It's like, come on. I go, honey, listen. Chris McGee said, give it a shot. I'm going to get on the bike. I'm going to wear it. And the next day, I got on the bike, and I put the helmet on my head, and it didn't feel heavy. And then I started riding. I swear to God, I'm not just saying this. I'll make things up, and it'll come back to haunt me if I do that, because everybody's
sure.
out there listening. They'll say, my God, Mike is full of shit. What happened to him? Let me tell you something. I didn't even know it was on my head. And
I
rode for maybe half an hour that day, and it was true. Now, all the other stuff, I didn't get a chance to check out. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Sure.
But the one thing I had to overcome was the fact that it's heavy. But it's heavy because of a lot of reasons. Now, I am with Donnie DeVito from New York.
You got it.
I feel a connection already. But he was also, he's a military veteran. His dad was in the Air Force, because the Air Force is close to my heart, near and dear to me,
sure.
an Air Force veteran that I am. I love the Air Force. So thanks, your dad. But you were in the military for a long time.
Yes.
You had a career. You retired. You a one-star general?
Me? No.
Oh, your dad was.
Yeah,
okay.
My dad.
Anyway, I meet this great guy, CEO of Kirsch Helmets, Donnie DeVito. We start talking, and I'm going to shut up in a minute. And let him tell you some of the stories he told me. And then we're going to talk about this helmet, too. You're an interesting guy. And I don't meet a lot of people that all of a sudden go, wait a minute, this guy's kind of cool. And I'm glad to have you on air. I was planning on bringing in, I told Chris, hey, get me this guy, get me that guy. But after I met you, I said, hey, Chris, I'll hold the rest of it. I just want to, let's do this with me and Donnie and let everybody know. And by the way, politics-wise, Cuomo resigned. That's the good news. The bad news is the idiot Republicans approved the $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill. What in the hell are they thinking? We talk about helmets and the price. We all try to keep the prices of everything down.
Sure.
Democrats try to just go nuts with inflation. Everything's more money. Everything's more. And the challenges of businesses, guys like you, it's got to be tough right now.
Sure does.
But you're pushing through it. You're persevering. And you got this relatively new helmet company.
Yeah,
tell us about it.
I want to back up a second here. When you said the good, the bad, and the ugly, I'm just glad that you didn't decide I was the ugly part of this broadcast. So we're really happy to be here. I'm really happy to talk to you about our helmet. It is the only helmet that's entirely made in the United States. We worked really hard to make that happen. All the materials are sourced here in the United States, from the silicone that we use in the fluid displacement liner. Yeah. To the polycarbonate shell that we have. It's really an incredible product. If we couldn't find a part in the United States that was made in America, we partnered with somebody to help us do that. And so we do all this. All of our final assembly is done up in New York. We do our manufacturing of our liner, which is our primary component, right there in Queensbury, New York, just a little north of Albany, where Cuomo used to work. So I got to tell you, it's been an honor and a privilege. I met Jay 5 years ago, Jason Kershon, who's the inventor of the technology, and he and I put the business together and a plan. We focused on motorcycles first. We feel that's where the pain point is the greatest in the head protection industry, and we started with our half helmet because we knew 40% of all riders buy helmets every year. Buy half helmets, and it's a huge part of the market, and we really wanted to go after that to really help riders like Jay, like the rest of us, like all of you in the V-twin community who spend most of their time under half helmet lids. And we really wanted to do that so we can give you a better product and something that's stylish and more comfortable and still stands up to the DOT certification.
It does, and usually I wear when I'm not wearing a full face because I'm traveling, 35 degree cold weather, rain, and all those elements. Mm-hmm. I wear my little beanie helmet, or I don't wear a helmet at all. And instead of my beanie, I'll wear this. And it was cold, comfortable. I'm not a big proponent of helmets. Like, oh, you got to wear a helmet. It's going to save your life. I'm the worst motorcycle rider I know. I really am. I've been doing this my whole life. I'm talking about a long time. I've crashed bikes. I've totaled at least 4 Harleys. And
wow.
I totaled one, no helmet at all, in Yellowstone Park. I don't know how, 10 years ago. We were talking last night. There's a lot of things that go into this. And I always say I want to practice safe riding. I'm not going to worry about safe crashing, okay? I want safe riding, comfortable riding. Mm-hmm. Part of the things that I like about a helmet, it makes the ride. To me, and I'm not just saying this, over the years, I've come to say, if I could go no helmet or a helmet, if I get a helmet that's light, a little bit, it makes it more comfortable.
Sure.
It just does. Because no matter what, I'm going a little faster than I should, a little further than I should, and a little longer than I should. So I'd rather have the helmet on that takes care of it. I wear this helmet, and once it's on your head and you're moving, there's no weight there. And this liner keeps it cool. I was in 111 to 115 degree heat in Baker coming up.
All right.
I was dying.
Hot.
But you know what? The liner, when I took the helmet off, the liner was still like a little, it wasn't hot. It was room temperature. It wasn't cold. But
sure.
Then I chilled it out. I had to go inside the place in Baker because my cell phone was overheating. I get off the bike and I look at the cell phone. It says, it's, you know, overheating, cool this down. So I put it in the ice cream box in the store. Like, I slide open to get the cold water and the Gatorade, and then you walk over and they got the box with all the ice cream in it. That's where I put my cell phone. It's
good
also
idea.
Where I put the liner in my helmet.
There you go.
And I just stuck it in there. 15 minutes later, I'm fine. Put it back on my head and make the trip to Vegas.
Yeah, didn't that feel great?
You know, it was terrific. Fine. So I'm going, this works. It's cool. I like it.
I'm glad you do.
There's got to be a lot of challenges because there must be a number that you have to hit in manufacturing in order to make it pay off. If you make 100 or 1,000, it's got to be some 10,000. I don't know what the number is.
Oh, there always is. The cost to take a company from a prototype to a industrialized product, it always costs more and takes more time than anybody thinks, and that's where we're at. We've taken that extra time. Sometimes you have to do the right thing, even though it's the tough thing to do, and we've done that before, just like you and I both in the military. Sometimes the hardest thing is the right thing, and that's what we did here. We had to back up a few times and look at our supply chain and who we were getting our materials from and work that over. Of course, COVID came and affected the whole planet in a supply chain. Fortunately for us, our supply chain is all American as well, so we were able to work closely with our suppliers here in the United States to make sure that we were able to maintain our product and maintain the supply line that we are so important to a young company. So we're able to do all those things. But you know, when you talk about distribution and getting out there, and that's something really important to a young company, it was complicated because of COVID. People were keeping distant until people started getting vaccinations and the country started to open up again. Of course, here there's the freedom in South Dakota to do what they want to be able to do it safely, but a lot of the country was shut down, and that created problems for us as we tried to begin distribution.
Even here in South Dakota, look, we got here. And there's a lot of places that just can't get that to make it happen. The hospitality industry has been crushed with this because they raised the prices like everything else. Inflation and competing with the government for wages is kind of tough. So the prices are through the roof.
Well, you know, Mike, one thing that's happened for us, and I got to tell you, I think it's because of our mission and who we're doing it for. Our team, we've won awards from New York State, and the Department of Labor awarded us their gold medallion for hiring vets and maintaining a veteran workforce.
I love that.
So we're able to take people off active duty and others who are just retired and bring them in to be our technicians, running our robots and helping us do assembly. We're hiring people with disabilities to be able to do work up there in New York. So we've been able to actually have a group of men and women that are passionate for what we do and willing to work at a reasonable wage for a young company. So we reward them by giving them the opportunity to own part of the company. And that's something that is important to us because we know that they're going out of their way to help us get our mission done. And they think about our customers and the people that get injured and what we want to do to protect them.
Is that like an ESOP plan, an employee stock option?
No, we're just awarding them incentive options and other things to be able to own shares over time. And you know, because they are underpaid for what they do. So many of them are on the road. I have a number of people here with me. They left their families to come out here to South Dakota to do their work. And others are back in New York and traveling to other states to be able to show our helmet to other distributors, other Harley-Davidson stores and owner groups and such. So it's really something. They're all giving well of their time, and their passion for it just helps motivate Jason and myself to keep doing what we do for them and for our customers.
I got to tell you, for me, I'm a business guy. I believe in it. And I think it's exciting to see a company start off. Now, there's no givens here. This thing is heavy.
Sure.
And I can't think of any other negative but the fact that it's heavy. And yet, you guys are going forward. You're here. Everything you just said is all set up. There you are at the Legends Ride. You got your whole staff. You got your tent. You got your shirts with your name on. Kirsch helmets everywhere you go. No, seriously. And then you got a guy like Chris McGee out there. Great guy. And I want to talk about this guy for a minute because it's cool. I wish he was here. And I'm going to get him on the podcast one of these days. But you got involved with Steve Peel.
Yes.
And I got to tell you, it's funny because I've seen Steve, he retired from Harley about 6 years ago.
Sure.
And I've seen him a few times since. And we stay every year, and I've been staying every year, at the Rushmore Hotel. Back in the day, it was the Radisson and whatever. But it's always been owned by my buddy Kareem, who, you know, I met 25 years ago through GOAT. Everybody in the rally should know GOAT. He's on the radio. He's an institution here. And he runs the stage at the Full Throttle. And he introduced me to Kareem back in the 90s, and I introduced Kareem to Steve Peel. Steve Peel was the head of communications and did all this stuff for Harley Davidson for years and years. And then you cross paths with them over the years and whatever. And then I see Steve, and I were talking last night. It just talking with some friends at the table. And I go, Steve, I said, you're the guy that started Hog. I remember that. And we start talking about it because that was 1981, 82.
Exactly.
There was no such thing as Hog. Everybody,
that's right.
I've been riding Harley since 67, okay? And I was stationed down in South Carolina, and I had a BSA, and it was a Lightning Horn. I loved the bike, and I saw what the Honda was doing and the Japs were doing, and I'm going to buy American. And I sold my, you know, 10-year-old BSA and bought a 10-year-old Harley. I never got off the Harley. It was never riding the way. But I used to go to Fort Bragg. I remember riding up there because I was stationed in South Carolina. I ride about, it was about 100 miles, maybe less, to Fort Bragg. I spent plenty of time there. I remember doing a night jump once, and I had the bike outside, couldn't bring it in, and jumped on the bike and rode to New York. That was at like, what, 11 o'clock at night by the time we were done and everything else. So I rode that bike, and then I had the Harleys, and then Harley Davidson came out, and I'm living in New York at this point. It's the 80s. You live in New York. You're not traveling around the country on a bike. And Harley came out with an 883 and said $39.99, and you could always trade it. Trade it 20 years, so you still get your $39.99. I said, okay, if I don't like the bike, that's great. Let me give it a shot. I give it a shot. 2 years later, they come out with the Evolution engine, and I get my FXR, and then the rest is history.
Sure.
But
great bikes.
I remember that you buy the bike and you get a Hog membership. What's a Hog membership? And I'm talking to Steve Peel, and I go, you started Hog. I said, that's right. I said, I remember now, because I broke down. When I got that FXR, the first thing I did, 1985, I said, I could ride this bike anyplace. It was amazing. I decided to ride the Sturgis. I put a big POW MIA flag behind my bike. Rode to Sturgis. It was amazing. I think it was the next year that I was in Sturgis, and I rode down to Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I was going to ride back to New York that way, and I broke down. I do. I called 1-800-CLUB-HOG. And I'm telling Steve, I said, geez, I remember that.
Did Steve come fix your bike for you?
In those days, they might have.
There might have been five of them.
They told me where to go to get it fixed. It was Thunderbird Harley. It was on a Monday, so they were closed. When you're on a Harley, man, back in the day, there was nobody would go by you on the Harley. Everybody stopped to help. And then once I did the 1-800-CLUB-HOG, found out where to go, a couple of guys stopped and pushed me there. But it was right downtown. Albuquerque, that's it. Thank you. Tony Two Toes sitting over there. So I go there, and it was the guy that bought the place, Chick Hancock. He bought it. He was there that day, and they fixed the bike, and then I got on the road, and I'm riding, and I break down again. Whatever they fixed broke off, and I call 800-CLUB-HOG. And I'm sitting there talking to Steve Peel last night, going through this whole history of the Hog thing, and then the rest of it, and his being the communications director and everything he's done since. And I got to tell you, it was so much fun. And my friend Joey Mark is sitting at the table, and he doesn't know anything about this history. He's just a guy that he's a musician who sells furniture, and he rides motorcycles.
Okay.
And his wife, Girlie, rides the hell out of motorcycles. And they're sitting at the table, and Joey is listening to me and Steve Peel talking about the history of Harley Davidson the last 30 years, going back into the 80s when I rode from New York down to Daytona every year and went to, what was it, Hog Heaven at the Holiday Inn, Sunrise. And then we went to the racetrack. And then he said, that was me. He said, that was my, I said, really? I said, I remember going down there in 1984, 85, 86, and I'm on my FXR. And I remember meeting Vaughn Beals. Vaughn Beals was the CEO of Harley when it turned around. It was the buyback.
Yeah, with AMF. From
AMF, and then boom, and all the people. But Vaughn Beals was the legendary CEO, and I remember going up to him at the racetrack.
Clyde was there at the time.
Yeah, Clyde Flessler. You know, that's the guy that invented, quote-unquote, motor clothes. So anyway, I didn't know that Steve had been involved with your company.
Sure.
All I needed was Chris, and that was enough to give credibility to me. I come here, and I'm talking to Steve, and I realize that he's that deeply involved with Kirsch Helmets.
Oh, yeah.
That was very impressive. He's just a terrific guy with a lot of history in this man. Is. That guy knows his stuff.
I've been really lucky. One of the first things I focused on after we began to raise capital was building the team. We needed people from engineers and people that could work in the facility to the vendors and partners. We did everything that we did. We just had to continue to add people over and over. So it was really a great thing, bringing Steve on, bringing Chris on. We've got people like Bob Kay.
Bob Kay, is he with you too?
Bob is an advisor to us, and of course his history, and he helps us differentiate our product when we talk about variants. And
I didn't know that.
Yep.
I don't know a lot about this company. I'm just finding out. I just know about what it's like to ride with this helmet, but that's another. You got good taste in people, man. You got to know people real well, because the people that so far, Chris, Steve, and now Bob Kay?
Yeah, Bob's been with us. He's been an advisor to us. I don't make a move without talking to him about it a bit, to see what he thinks we should be doing. And that's really something. When you have people like that, you just can look before you leap. And business, you have to go fast. But you paint yourself into a corner pretty quick. So you got to make sure the advisors you have and the people around you that guide you really know what they do. And there's three Motorcycle Hall of Fame guys that just really do great work for us. And the rest of the team is just as high quality. We have our CFO, our project manager, the person who directs our facilities, our production and all that. They all have resumes as long as these guys. So when it comes to manufacturing, we do what we need to do. And when it comes to the distribution and branding and merchandising, all of that, we have the right guys. And certainly Steve has been there, right there in front, helping me understand the market and who the customer is. That's why I think we do so well when we focus on the V-twin riders, especially the Harley-Davidson riders and now the Indian rider.
We're going to probably talk more about this helmet down the road. We're going to talk more about your company as you're going to grow. There's no question. You're going to go from these helmets to construction helmets. I don't know if you've looked at any military opportunities.
Enhanced combat helmet is an important area. We hope to look there and see what we can do. This is all about changing. It's an ingredient, this fluid liner. It's all about changing the way the helmet processes energy and an impact. And what you have in a ballistics helmet and combat helmets is something very real. That's a critical area. We think that's why a lot of our fighting men and women are coming home with injuries that are even widely unknown. I think there's something we don't understand is the connection between PTSD and traumatic brain injury. A lot of these young men and women that fight for us are getting injuries that are not fully understood. So we may treat them with PTSD, but really what they may be experiencing are the effects of a traumatic brain injury. So we need to find ways to better protect their heads. And that starts with a better helmet. And I believe over time we'll be able to understand what our helmet does and how that might work for warfighters.
I got to tell you the other thing. It's like I said to Petrina, I don't know about how I'm going to like wearing it, but if anybody messes with me, I'll just bash him with this helmet. So talk about warfighters.
You know, as we architected the head form that fits that helmet to exactly what the human head form is. And so it's able to give you a low profile and comfortable fit. The key thing to our technology is we can do in a half an inch of fluid what it takes 3 inches of foam to do. That changes everything. That's really where the revolution is.
But is there going to be a lot less weighty on a helmet that we're in a combat zone versus on the motorcycle?
Well, our combat helmets, you know, were pretty heavy. And you're standing up against the force of shrapnel and, you know, ballistics. So they are going to be heavy. But the problem for a lot of the fighters in extended hot areas is heat exhaustion, heat injury. So having a liner that can actually cool the head down, like you talk about on the ride, in 100-degree heat, 110-degree heat, is something really important as well. So if they're working in Army Corps of Engineers or working in a combat zone, or you have warfighters moving things, digging fighting positions, whatever they're doing, or inside a armored vehicle. It's a problem in these situations, is you want to be able to reduce the heat on their head. And part of doing that is allowing the for transfer of heat away from your head. And so that fluid liner will do that under every circumstance. It's an everything bagel when you think about it. You have better hearing. You have better peripheral vision because of the way the helmet's designed and how we open up the areas. You don't have the wobble and the wind drag that you get from a lighter helmet. You have all those other features that really give you a more comfortable ride. So we talk about style and improved performance, which is reducing wind drag, giving you cooling and all that, but then not sacrificing the safety of a DOT-certified helmet. So that this kind of gives you a little bit of everything. A lot of people, what they want is, if they want something that's DOT-certified, they pay a price by having something that's hot, big, that mushroom head, 3 inches of foam, keeping you hot and closing you in. Then if you want something that gives you the freedom of comfort, you wear a beanie that for most people is not adequate protection.
So, not at all.
So we just feel and we advocate that people have a choice. And when they have a choice about the kind of equipment that they wear, we just want them to take a look at what we're doing and see if it works for them or not. So you try out the helmet, and if it works for you, then that's great, and we want to have more about it and learn what we're doing. And if it doesn't work for you, that's fine.
Will it ever be lighter?
I think over time it'll be lighter. We've come up with some other designs with the interior liner that could actually save some weight.
Mm-hmm.
But we're really not focused on trying to save on weight. What we're trying to do right now is make sure that the helmet works in every condition in all kinds of impacts. And that's what's more important. This can be hit repeatedly. And so when people have an accident, right now DOT is only testing for linear acceleration, one direction of an impact. So that's what it is, but we're starting to see around the world, like in Europe, new standards for head protection, and they're actually looking at angular acceleration, which is how your body twists and turns when you have an accident. 85% of all the people that have a brain injury have an injury that comes from that. So it's actually a multi-directional injury that occurs, and that's why sometimes it's better in an impact not to wear a helmet, because that torque is what can hurt you, and if you have a big radius helmet, that can be a problem. So in certain accidents, but we do know that if you can lower the radius, make it smaller like our helmet does, be able to do that, that's going to give you an opportunity to survive an impact better than a lot of the options that are out there.
Yeah, I don't want to go into all the stuff, because I'm not an engineer, but I've been riding motorcycles a long time. And like I said, I'm the crash dummy. I'm the guy that's crashed his bike a lot.
Back at the office, sometimes I am. They've hit me over the head with 2x4s and hammers.
I got to tell you, everything that reminds me of a story, I got to bring it up. That's just the way it is.
Hey, that's great.
So we're in Vietnam, and stationed with a bunch of guys. We had a small CCT team. It was actually forward air control team, and
I was at
TAC P with the forward air control team.
So you called in the Spectre units and all
that.
Yeah,
my buddy Jim Donaldson and I.
Cool.
And we're bringing in airstrikes. That's what we do. And we're embedded with the 101st Airborne. So there's 13 of us, 7 pilots and 6 airmen, just doing our job, marking targets, talking to the fast movers, bringing them in, having them. We'd mark the target, and then we'd have to call in the grid. Right? Hey, it's 39 longitude and 38 longitude. We knew what we were doing. It's the only war we had, baby.
We're brothers from a different mother, because that's part of what I did on active duty myself.
Well, man. So one morning, and I'll tell you, I remember, I think it was the second of the 50 Deuce, and we go out. We used to go out with the troops on the ground and bring in the airstrikes, and I would travel. I would carry the Prick 41, that radio on your back with the batteries and everything else. Oh, yeah. I'd carry the Prick 41, and Jim would carry the batteries. And plus, I'm carrying my M16. I'm at 45. I got a full complement of everything else, and we're going out. So we show up at dark freaking 30, like, I don't know, 5 in the morning, 4 in the morning. We all show up. I'm a combat controller. In my head, I'm like king of the jungle, right?
Right.
And so me and Jim go out in our boonie hats. And there's the other guys, the whole platoon from the 101st, the 2nd, the 327. And they're all wearing the helmets and all their gear. And I'm going, hey, I'm Air Force, baby. I'm special. I don't need a helmet. Who needs a friggin' helmet, you know? And so the first shirt goes nuts. He comes out, he comes over to us. And we're still in base camp, somewhere around Phan Rang or someplace, you know, in the middle of no place. And he comes out, and he could scream and talk loud. And he starts going at us. And I hold my ground. So he calls over, what was his name? Captain Garland. I think it was Captain Garland. And he calls over this captain guy, wakes him up. Guy comes over. And so West Point guy, because Jim Donaldson knew who he was. Oh, my God, that's a cool dude, man. He's a West Point guy. I go, really? I said, we're in trouble over here. I was in trouble all the time. So he comes over, and he looks at us, and he looks at the first shirt, and he says, hey, you know what? What's your concern, Sarge? I wouldn't be concerned if I was you. The snipers always go for the guys that look different. I look at Jim Donaldson, he looks at me. We run back and pick up our helmets so fast.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes there's a reason.
That's when I started not wearing my bars, when I figured that out.
Oh, yeah, there you go. That's smart.
Yeah, I learned that. That was the first thing they told us, stop saluting in the field.
Exactly.
I was down at Fort Bragg, and I remember I had just gotten my commission, and I was crossing the street, and there was another officer. I recognized him as being higher ranking than me, and it, you know, what does a dumb lieutenant do when you see an officer that's outranks you? You salute them, but you don't salute them unless you're within 10 paces of them. But we were across the street from each other. We were never going to be closer than that. So I waved at him. And he ran at me, and he started yelling at me, banging his cap on my mine fell on the ground, and he yelled at me for the next 10 minutes.
Wow.
He dressed me down pretty good, so I never waved again.
Never waved.
What do you do?
You know what I used to love to do? I swear to God. You know, I used to love to, you see these, you know, these second Louis, man, walk out. I'd salute them with my left hand. To see. I never got caught. Not once. I'd walk by him, salute left-handed.
Yeah, I've seen that before, too, but I never said anything because I want to be like
maybe
that.
Maybe I got caught and didn't know it then.
Well, they might have noticed, but you know, sometimes those aren't the things worth talking about.
Yeah, well, that good for you guys, because there were other guys that if they figured it out, they would have turned me around.
Well, you know, you're doing a tough job. You don't need to get yelled at for little things like that.
You'd be surprised.
Oh,
and
I know.
Listen, I always tell this story because it's so amazing. In life, it's these things that get you. We would go out for days, right? Mm-hmm. Come back. Now, I'm going out and bringing in airstrikes. Now, I come back. When I'm in the compound, I had a fatigue shirt. It's 100 and some degree. You're humid. You're sweaty. You're sticky. It's
sure.
Vietnam, for crying out loud.
Sure.
And so I had a cut-off shirt, fatigue shirt. Now, it had my stripes. It wasn't cut off at the shoulder. It was cut off above the elbow. Everything else was on, but it was cut off so I could, my arms, I could breathe, get a little air in there, whatever.
Couldn't keep all that muscle in there.
At base camp, we're walking back. We had just gotten back from being out, you know, in the triple canopy, whatever,
sure.
Doing what we do. Some 101st Airborne Second Lieutenant, I swear to God, I don't know his name, I don't remember. He stops me and gives me, like, I'm telling you, I ended up getting an Article 15.
Wow.
I mean, I wasn't going to just sit there and listen. I said, sir, we just came back from an airstrike. We just did this. We just did that. I don't care. You're going to talk back to me? Blah, blah, blah. You know how it is. You were that guy. So
no, I wasn't that guy.
You wasn't that guy. But no, here's the irony.
Sure.
Here's the irony of it. And, I ride back. I was there at the dedication of the Vietnam Veterans Wall. And there's a whole story that needs to be told in a book and something that people will recognize about that day. That was November 13th of 1982. And there was a guy at the vortex of the wall. The wall comes to that. And he stood there with an American flag. And there was, I think, two guys on either side of him.
Mm-hmm.
And he stood there holding that American flag. Now, we got there at, like, early in the morning, 7 o'clock. I slept under the Washington Monument from 4 or 5 in the morning mm-hmm. till then. Got up, walked over. Everything went blank from 7 to 9. Then they moved us back so they could have the ceremony.
Sure.
Dedicate the wall. These guys stayed at that apex, the vortex, holding that American flag. They would not leave. The park police, the Secret Service, everybody tried to get them to move. They would not move. and they negotiated standing there and not moving as we all, the crowd just, you know, now it's like 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. They had to postpone everything trying to get these guys out of there. They would not move until there was an agreement to put an American flag. And the statue of the three soldiers mm-hmm. with that American flag that reflects on the wall
right.
was the result of these guys standing there. And there was always someone at that wall 24/7 for 2 years until that flag got there. Always somebody holding that flag. Reserve units from around the country would take 2 weeks at a time and volunteer and be there. Wow. So this went on. So now we have the dedication of the statue in 1984. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, Reagan was president. And I, you know, it was another big, big deal. I look at the statue. They got three soldiers. They're all cut off sleeves at the shoulder. I'm going, wait a minute. I come out of a battlefield situation. I'm walking in. I throw out, you know, I get an Article 15. And now they're celebrating with the statue.
Well, sometimes time will change perspective, right?
Crazy, right?
Yeah, that's crazy. All right.
Well, I think perspectives change.
I'm glad you stood your ground.
Well, perspectives may change, but you epitomize the capitalist, the free market that America is about. When we talk freedom, you have the freedom to start your company, to put together the people, to meet with, you know, Jay Kirsch and whatever, however you did it, and then to say, you know what, we're going to do it with this 25-pound helmet. I don't know if it's 20. It's probably it's just a little more than normal. I'm making fun,
but
seriously, you had the guts to put your money where your mouth is, to go out and raise the funds, to do what you had to do, everything you talked about, and you're going to say, and what if it fails? What if it doesn't work? What if it all crumbles down? You've taken 5 years of your life, plus mm-hmm. all these other people. Investing money, that's a big deal. Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But investing time, when you talk about years, that's huge. Because, look, I love America, and I respect every working man and woman that's out there. They have a job. They're getting a salary. They're getting this. They're putting money away. They retire. They get a pension. That's great. And I love that, you know? But the entrepreneur, the person that goes out, the small business owner, takes a risk.
Sure.
That risk, people don't realize. I think it's 3 or 4 out of 5 businesses fail in the first 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
Businesses, it's a major risk. Now, you start your company, and it's you and Jay and maybe two other. Pretty soon, you got, what, 20, 30 employees?
Exactly.
You are creating those jobs. You're creating America. When they talk about the GDP, the gross domestic product, mm-hmm. most is generated by small business, by guys like you.
You're right.
And me. I did that for a long time.
Sure.
And listen, when these people say, oh, we're going to, you know, $1.2 trillion infrastructure. Hey, the government's not spending that money. You are. The government doesn't have any money. The government doesn't make any money. The government has nothing to do with entrepreneurship, nothing to do with capitalism. They're just a government. They could be the government of anything, anybody, any place. Their job is to be a government. Now, our job is the capitalists, the entrepreneurs, the people of America who want to continue being free. But if that government says you're not free anymore, that, hey, you know what? We've got a vaccine, and if you don't take it, you can't travel. You need a passport to go visit your neighbor down the street. They could do that, and they're trying to. If you go out of your house, you need to have a mask. If you're a 6-year-old kid in the second grade, you need to have a... What, are you kidding me?
Sure.
A government's not supposed to
I
do
agree.
That. But the government is now, according to what they tell me today, is saying, oh, no, we're going to spend $200 billion, $1.2 trillion. That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
We're going to spend it on infrastructure. Now, wait a minute. Okay, we're going to spend a third of that on infrastructure. You know, roads and bridges and whatever, and bandwidth, whatever. The rest of it, oh, and by the way, part of that money is we're going to spend a few million dollars to study taxing your mileage. Do you know that, America? That's what they just did. They just passed that. The Republicans, and I say the Republicans, look, it's a Democrat thing. Democrats, you know, the Communist Party, the socialist. Socialism is just... You know, I always say it's just a practice for communism. The next step. It's what it is. So it's communism. That's what they do. Okay, that's their job. They want total government control of everything. So the Republicans are supposed to be the pushback. They were supposed to represent us. Small business, a guy like you that sure. put all this money it and time and harder. Effort. By the way, it's not just a small thing to bring other people in. You're going to convince other people. How do you feel if it doesn't work out? When it doesn't work out, because so many small businesses don't.
All so true.
All of a sudden, this government is spending all this money. Not their money. They don't have any money. They're spending your money.
Takes
my
away.
Money. But they're flooding the market with money, making the dollar less valuable. They have devalued the dollar. Do they know what they're talking about? Do they have a clue? Do you think they're intelligent enough?
No, I don't think they think about it.
I don't think they think about it either.
No,
now,
it's...
listen, I got friends who are Democrats. People grow up, they're Democrats, maybe they're union members. Well, I always talk about this. I don't understand how they don't figure it out. Maybe now they will. There's got to be a tipping point to all these people voting for Democrats. There's got to be a tipping point where they realize, wait a minute, they're spending my money, you know, 1.2 trillion. Now, right the day after the Senate approves it, now they're going with 3.5 trillion. If you want to have AOC as your president, you want to have Nancy Pelosi as your president, good luck to you. That's not who I am, and I don't want Joe Biden either.
Well, I got to tell you, Mike, I appreciate what you're saying. And you know, when you started your businesses, you had the same uncertainty. You had the same kinds of people that were running government. I think a lot more can happen for a business than what goes on in Washington. So we just focus on our mission and what we're trying to do.
Right.
And everything else is around that. I think at the core, capitalism is creative destruction. It's about tearing down the old way of doing things and then making things new. So we looked at the helmet business. Jay looked at the helmet business and said, you know, people are still getting hurt. Foam doesn't work. People would rather not wear helmets than wear helmets that we know can protect them. So we got to tear down the old way of doing things. And he spent time thinking about it and came up with this solution. We've got 21 patents now. We've got our first international patent a few weeks ago. We're filed in 40 countries. And it's all about that liner and what Jay was able to think of and create. And then the rest of us, our role is to just take that and then build the opportunity around it, first by bringing manufacturing back to the United States, fighting for that, and making sure that we create jobs here. And we have a special feeling in our heart, you know, for servicemen and women like you and I, because we want to make sure that we put those people to work in good jobs that are useful jobs that make a difference. You know, a lot of them spent their careers doing hard things and maybe unpleasant things, for sure, and we want to give them the opportunity to do the work with us that will save lives, that will make lives better in the faces of the people that wear our helmets and motorcycles, or some child is riding a bicycle with our technology, or somebody who's playing hockey, or a construction worker that can go home every night because they have a better helmet. So we're going to work on all that. You know, you're right. There's a lot of these things are wrong. The fabric of the country, though, still comes together over revolutionary ideas that are able to fix pain points, find a problem and fix it better than everybody else and do it over and over again. And that's what we're trying to do.
And you know what? I could tell you keep on going back to that because you believe in it. You believe in it. And I hope that one of the things that comes out of this pandemic, we've learned a lot in this pandemic.
We have.
People have seen for the first time, because of this Zoom thing, which I don't like any bother, kids going to school on Zoom, so the kids are home, they're going to school, and the parents are watching what they're learning. CRT, we're a racist country, white people are bad. I mean, they're seeing this for the first time, and they're realizing. Now they're also seeing something else. Government mandates, whether they work or not, I don't care. They're wrong. They're just wrong. And there's a right way to do things and the wrong way to do things. You could do it the wrong way and get the job done, or you could do it the right way and not do the same job, but it's the right way. That's what the idea is in a capitalist world, an entrepreneurial world, the marketplace. It's mm-hmm. the magic of the marketplace.
You're right.
You got to trust the market. People used to say to me, Mike, what's your biggest worry about your Harley dealership? Are you worried about this or that? I don't worry about the vagaries of the marketplace. I only worry about the government. As long as the government stays out of our lives. So I hope that we learn something in this pandemic other than, you know, the valuable lesson of what our kids are learning so we can go in there and take back the school system. I hope we're learning that mandates don't work because it's not right. It's just not right to say to somebody, if you don't have a vaccine, look, I'm vaccinated, baby. You know, I'm there. So if you're not vaccinated, I don't worry. You're not going to hurt me because I got the vaccine. So why is the government going to mandate something like that? It's wrong. Why are they going to mandate masks? Because it's wrong. The mask, by the way, masks are a facade. It doesn't do anything. It's bullshit. It's just not right. And it gives you a false sense of security. That's how I feel about helmets. And that's why I feel that helmet laws are bullshit and wrong. There's only 19 states, by the way, that have mandatory helmet laws for adults. And I'm wearing this helmet because I want to. I wear it through states that don't have helmet laws. I'm wearing it because it's comfortable, because it keeps my hair in place.
All of them?
Everyone that's left is precious. So I hope that we can have a good relationship.
Oh, we're going to have a great one.
But I want to know you to know how I feel about it's the laws that are bothering me.
I get it, and I appreciate being able to come here. And like you, I was actually raised by an Air Force general and an Italian mother. So like you, I have no problem telling people what's on my mind. So I think we can do this more and more. I think we're going
to
either have...
married to an Italian.
Oh, by the way, I got to tell everybody, this is Petrina's first full time at the helm. She's the producer. Honey, you did a great job. Thank you so much. She's awesome. Hey, you know, we got all this equipment. You know, we got the microphones, the headset, the computers, and we got Petrina behind the scenes working everything, making, oh, seriously. Yeah.
All the cues.
Great job, honey.
Everything.
Thank you.
Now tell everybody to subscribe.
Oh, yeah. Tell them to subscribe.
Subscribe to Roll Right Radio, everybody.
That's the voice of Petrina. Subscribe to Roll Right Radio. We're getting better all the time because America needs to hear this voice. Roll Right Radio, I'm New York Mike. You've been listening to Donny DeVito from New York, New York native. Hey, we all got to come from someplace, right?
Yes.
That's the way it goes. So we're going to be talking about this some more. I'm going to watch your company grow.
You will.
Roll Right Radio is going to watch Kirsch Helmets grow, to getting to different helmet lines, get more helmets for motorcyclists, more accepted, more. It's going to be, and it's phenomenal to have you on, because I love this. The guts of the entrepreneur, that entrepreneurial spirit, that's what makes America great.
Yeah, and I feel the same
thank
way.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You got it, buddy. All right, I'm New York Mike.
Okay.
With New York Petrina.
And New York and Joey.
Yeah.
And
Girly and Joey and Tony Two Toes in the audience here at the Buffalo Chip Campgrounds in Sturgis, South Dakota. And we're going to be on the road going home pretty soon, but I think I got another podcast in me before we leave. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being there. Thanks for subscribing. I'm New York Mike. I'm over and out.